Welcome to the Treasury Update Podcast, presented by Strategic Treasurer, your source for interesting Treasury news, analysis, and insights in your car, at the gym, or wherever you decide to tune in. On this episode of the podcast, host Craig Jeffrey joins Pete Shreyovich, Chief Technology Officer at GTreasury, to discuss modern Treasury technology. Topics of discussion center around market changes and expectations, new Treasury requirements, the move to simpler and flexible models, security applications, and more. Listen in to this insightful discussion to learn simple solutions to Treasury management to better position your company for success.
Welcome to the Treasury Update Podcast. This is Craig Jeffrey. I'm the Managing Partner of Strategic Treasurer. Today's episode is Architecting Modern Treasury Technologies. I'm here with Pete Shreyovich, who's the CTO of GTreasury. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. But before I get into the discussion on modern Treasury technology, let me provide a little bit of context first, or let's start the discussion with some context. Maybe you could tell me what you're seeing in the market and hearing from the clients that you talk to. You know, what's the basis for discussion on this topic about modern Treasury technology? What are the concerns or hot buttons that people are talking to you about?
I think great question, because what I'm really seeing right now is a little bit of an industry at an inflection point. With everything that's going on, the customers that I'm talking to, the conversation has really started to pivot towards speed, simplicity, and the need for really kind of having tighter insights and tighter integration in what they're doing. With a lot of the customers that I'm talking to today, it's as much a user experience conversation as it is a capability conversation. And, you know, I think most people want to default right away to user experience, meaning what you aesthetically see on the screen, but it's not. It's the interconnectivity and the flow of data across all of their systems, and really kind of in feeling in some ways that you're not leaving an ecosystem, that regardless of the capability or the system that you're in, they're speaking to each other in such a real-time fashion that you're able to see your information seamlessly move across your organization.
So not jumping from one platform to another, but just, like you said, seamlessly interface between one area and another, not really noticing.
When you move from one system to another, that confidence that, you know, the core of that backbone is transmitting that information, is keeping those other systems up to date, and you're in sync. So there's no, you know, there's no questions on latency of information. There's no questions on when does that next batch schedule run, but it's more of, I trust what I see is current and accurate, and it's been delivered in such an automated fashion that I'm spending my time focused on the analysis, not on marshaling data across the systems.
Yeah. So you mentioned insights and integration, and on the integration piece, obviously there's transactions, there's trading that goes on, there's data that moves across. But in terms of insights, could you explain and just give a little more description what you mean by insights, tighter insights?
You know, I think we've spent a lot of time this year looking and talking to our customers about where are the areas that they need help in. Understanding insights kind of ends up being, how do we make that actionable? And then it's not just a buzzword here. And I think one of the areas we've seen a lot of questions on, how do we get more predictive? How do we start to understand our data and make decisions based on better insights is, you know, in the forecasting space, for example. We're deeply focused right now on more AI, better automation, and definitely a lot more predictive forecasting. You know, this is one of those areas where customers are trying to be informed in many ways by the systems and the data they have, rather than just reporting on information.
So Pete, in addition to, you know, the insights and integration and simplicity and the user experience, is there much discussion going on around security or integrity of the process? Is that another issue you're hearing regularly? Is that less frequent?
No, it's absolutely table stakes at this point. I mean, I would tell you that almost all of the opportunities that we discuss with potential customers bring in our security operations team into the discussion. Given the day and age we live in and the world we live in, it is on every CFO's, chief risk officer's, CEO's mind, and ensuring that security is cornerstone to whatever applications they're bringing in-house. I think a lot of them are currently on this journey right now from systems that they've had inside their own organization out to large global SaaS providers, and understanding how and why it's different, understanding how and why it's more secure is something that they're greatly interested in right now. And I'd be hard pressed to tell you I haven't had a security related conversation with one of our customers in the last few months. It is absolutely something that that they're focused on and passionate about.
Maybe that dovetails into the next area I wanted to hear from you on is, you know, what's changing in terms of expectations and requirements of the treasury technology expert or the treasurer. You mentioned the table stakes or foundational requirements has to do with security, but maybe you could just expand where you see expectations and requirements moving for those in this field. I mean, there's a lot that's changed. It's a new era and the expectations have shifted. So how is that happening?
It's part of this digital evolution that I've had the opportunity in a number of other industries to kind of witness organizations go through. And it starts with, you know, the simple execution, kind of that seamless digital experience that we talked about. And they want to get to a kind of an environment in which they can start to pick and choose the offerings they want to integrate, both to existing infrastructure that they have, but to capabilities that they haven't had the opportunity to go after. And all in all, just, you know, trying to figure out how to get the best operational efficiency out of their systems. It's really kind of this marriage right now that is going on the back end side of the systems and, you know, across that backbone, if you will. How do we ensure that the kind of connective tissue really is cohesive across that? And then on the front end side of the product, I think what you're starting to see is a more savvy user. I would tell you that a end user's expectation is largely shifted. I know I've had this conversation both with customers and product managers in the industry. You go walk into anybody's desk right now, and there's usually, we say, three tabs open right now. They're doing some kind of online shopping when they can, and they've had that Amazon experience in the background. There's some social media page open, and then it's whatever a back office application that they're in. As they tab through those, the expectation is the third thing actually has that same experience, that same simplicity. I don't need heavy onboarding, heavy training on it. I should just know how to live and work in an environment like that because everything else does. And it's been interesting to see that as it bleeds into every industry, that expectation of kind of simplicity in the product is something that, you know, we get our customer advisory boards together and it, you know, starts with that conversation. Make the UIs easier, make my reporting experience faster, help me understand and how I'm going to digest the information better. So you've really got a user population right now that is hungry for a change in experience.
Yeah, it seems like with the increased sophistication or being savvy, as you mentioned, there's also a corresponding demand level. You know, I want these things to work more easily. I want them to be integrated. I want this open treasury feel where I can connect from my backbone to these other systems and areas. And I guess that makes sense as a development in this industry. Maybe we can move, you know, continue the discussion of talking about a modern treasury technology. Maybe you could give your definition of a modern treasury technology architecture. And I know you've already used the term digital backbone, and so I'm hoping to hear more on that. But how would you describe it in context and maybe help the listener understand what is that context, given all the changes that have occurred with technology and, you know, so many exciting things?
I think what we're seeing right now, and it's great actually to see this adoption, both by the banking systems as well as by the other software services in the industry, but it is kind of this openness to going more API centric, opening and unlocking kind of that interoperability between products and starting to establish a method of communication that ensures that, you know, the systems are in sync with one another. You talk about the backbone, it is really kind of the understanding of where your TMS sits within that ecosystem, and then how do you bridge the other products whether it's your ERP or it's, you know, your banking connections or things like that via APIs, to ensure, and I used this term before, but that there's really good connective tissue between all of those systems. So you start to have this seamless experience on the back end, and really in some ways, a simplification from an operational management of those systems. Once you've got them established and talking and connected, you've got much better operational control of where your information is and really understanding kind of what is the source of truth in those systems.
How does this ecosystem or body, if you will, if we're talking about digital backbone and connective tissue, maybe we should think of it as a body, but I guess ecosystem works as well. How can they work and play together well? And you've mentioned APIs or this concept of open APIs. Maybe you could explain and start with some of the concepts and weave in some of the cool terms that everyone likes to hear about, you know, from APIs to robotics to et cetera, any other area. How do they work together?
Sure. So, I mean, conceptually, what you're seeing right now is a moving away from closed and moving towards open, right? And that is, you know, you'll hear the banks are going with open banking. You know, the treasury management systems are saying open treasury. I mean, fundamentally, what it is exposing those key services, those key capabilities externally, not just to be used internally to the product itself, but externally to other systems to interact with. How you do that becomes where I think we've got a little bit of buzzword bingo going on in the industry right now of, you know, saying, organizations saying we're doing this or we're doing that, really understanding what they mean and how they enable folks. So I think it will start and continue with APIs just because there is the most capability that you can bring to bear when you're talking API to API communications, allowing customers to kind of develop capabilities into your system or leverage access points into your system to extend, you know, offerings and capabilities within other aspects of their organization. RPA is, I think, a big thing that we're invested a lot in. I think, you know, for those that haven't had an opportunity to see, you know, RG was offering our robotics in that space. It's a really interesting way to, I think, accelerate the integration points between products, between organizations, and really kind of use it as an opportunity to springboard your business case, right? To understand how that flow works. And is it better to do that deep API on the long term, or are you just doing something in the immediate term to kind of unlock some value out of your process? And then, you know, you kind of then talk about the advanced aspects of what you want to do. Transforming that information into insights. Well, what does that really mean? Well, can I bring other data sets together? Can I start to look at information that was in two systems as one? And what am I starting to kind of understand and notice? What kind of signals can, you know, things like machine learning and automatic artificial intelligence flag for you so that you're being alerted to actionable outcomes and spending time as an organization actioning on things rather than investigating and trying to come to those solutions. I think there's enough pattern awareness now in the data that we've got that allows us to really help organizations identify where their focus needs to be and alert them to kind of corrective measures that they need to make going forward.
So, Pete, you mentioned, you know, there's the opportunity for some pattern detection in the data and there's some value from that. Do you have an example of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the areas that we're starting to see the most question we get proposed is, you know, where can you help? Obviously, I referenced this earlier in the conversation, the forecasting side and our ability to bring in, I think, two things. One, new and advanced models in how we do forecasting. Let's be clear, we have a lot of organizations that are our customers that have their own models and they invest a lot of time and a lot of resource in their own types of insights. And they come to us saying, you know, it's great, we love your models, or we love even where you're heading with some of the new things, but how do we plug ours back into your system as well? And we'd like to kind of compare and analyze, you know, from that perspective. So having that kind of capability in the forecasting space is something that seems to be dominating a lot of conversations right now. Obviously, as security, is more and more paramount to what we're doing. You've got the fraud detection pieces of it as well. Not just even can you do it, but can you plug into other offerings? Where can you fit into that ecosystem? Because we've got things, we're comfortable with. And I think in a lot of places where companies have spent a lot of time kind of benchmarking and validating certain capabilities, they want to know the comfort that you're going to be easy to integrate with and you're going to bring those capabilities to them in a much simpler way.
Yeah, so those are some great examples. Now, can we step back to the RPA side? You mentioned you have a robot or a bot called G-Wiz, and to me that almost anthropomorphizes it. That's an awesome name, by the way. What are some of the things that you're doing with G-Wiz? Just maybe an example or two that people could say this helps the company and this helps the customer.
I mean, I think the key one, and going back to what are customers asking for, one big differentiation right now that they look at when they're trying to figure out what treasury management system to go with is, what is that implementation experience going to be like? But how complicated is it going to be? How automated is it going to be? And frankly, just how long is it going to take? And I think we have invested a lot in the RPA space to see how we accelerate the implementation lifecycle, how we bring more automation into that space, and really speed up and make the overall experience more turnkey, less burdensome in some ways to unlock value quickly. As we start to phase some of those implementations and understand how we help customers recognize value as quickly as possible, G-Wiz has been a great capability for us to go into that environment with and start to help customers map out their business processes and their flows and help bring that that implementation time so quite significantly down.
Now, if you'll permit me to ask you another question about APIs, you mentioned APIs and open APIs and handling the connectivity. Maybe you could describe how that's so different from some of the historical methods, either rekeying in information from one system to another or file-based transactions. Can you give us the chief technology officer's description to a business person, what that means? I guess you describe what it means, but how does that look different?
Sure. I mean, I think the simplest way to explain it is you've laid kind of the foundational plumbing between the two endpoints. So what you've done is eliminated single points of failure in that communication flow, and you've made the flow more real time from that perspective. So if I take an API as we integrate between our treasury management system and an FX provider, for example, I would establish the API, the communication's in place, it's up, it's real time, and as data is available or systems are called, that happens as it's happening, effectively. When you look at kind of how we used to do that with FTPs, you would have to set up a process to run on a schedule at a certain time of, based on an event or a time of day that would produce a file. You'd have to deliver that file. The file would then get transmitted over to the other system. That would get uploaded. It would now wait for another scheduled process, and then you would wait for that, either the response or the data to be reflective kind of in that system. As you can see, like, that becomes a very choppy process. And what you end up with a little bit is customers starting to question which system's even accurate, because if they don't have the inherent awareness to when those jobs run, when those schedules work, if the data isn't updated in one system or another at the same time and kept in sync, you could be making decisions that are accurate based on a point of time, but not accurate based on current.
Yeah, it sounds like that transformation moves from a system, this FTP process of a lot more points of exposures, points where things can fail, and a process that's a lot less responsive to one that's more dynamic. You go into the FX platform, then it's giving you refresh rates. You're not having to trigger a call by hitting something or have those scheduled so they're running every 20 seconds so that it gives you more information. So Pete, what does a treasurer and a treasury technologist, or just a technologist that's supporting finance or treasury, need to consider when they're when they're looking at moving to a modern technology architecture, a modern technology stack, what's important for them to consider and think about?
As a technologist, I try to help both our, you know, our own business as well as, you know, our customers kind of go through that decision-making process and kind of, you know, build out that the framework for what they need to be comfortable with where they're going. I think, you know, first and foremost, it's, you know, understanding, are you building something that works for you today, or are you building something that can grow with you? Really understanding, you know, what are the capabilities, but beyond that, where is the extensibility? And do you have the right capabilities put in place to really kind of change and evolve with your business? For us to assume that any business or any customer is going to be static today versus, you know, the life cycle of the relationship really kind of, I think, ends up being a bit short-sighted. And, you know, we try to focus on ensuring that we've got kind of capabilities that meet them through their various stages of growth. You know, I'll tell you, you know, as we've looked at kind of in our payments processing space, we're often having conversations with customers on, you know, size, scale, and volume change through the life cycle of a business. You know, a company that was processing tens of thousands of payments a month is now processing millions of payments in that same time frame, and they come to us and say, I think there's concern. How do you grow and scale with us? And we've been able to kind of keep that in mind and ensure that we've got various frameworks and various models to help with that evolution. Ensuring that you've got kind of the pieces there in place that are simple in some ways to swap out as well. You do a lot of work on the implementation side to build that interconnectivity across your TMS and the kind of other partners within that ecosystem. Those partners will change. And as companies grow, you know, they will move from a mid-range ERP to an enterprise level ERP, and then ensuring that you've got interoperability with those APIs as well is key, so that they feel confident that the core of that backbone really stays strong and as well as flexible in kind of what you need as an organization.
Yeah, as you were saying those things, I was wondering if you had to choose between, let's say, your backbone system, one that's more flexible and open, or one that has more capabilities or modules built into it. What would be your point on that?
I choose flexibility. I believe that, you know, their capabilities can come, and whether you want to attach them in to the overall ecosystem externally or build them in, you know, to your capability set internally, those things are very much kind of in your own control. But ensuring that you've got the kind of flexibility of that system to grow, expand and evolve as your business does, that's the important one, because having a static system that isn't responsive to your needs of your organization as you inevitably grow and change really kind of paints you into a bit of a corner. Having something there that has that real flexibility behind what you need just makes that evolution that you need to go through simpler, and you're focused on your business. You're not focused on your operational software.
Open is strategic. Closed is closed has an endpoint. Pete, as we draw this episode of the podcast to a close, any final thoughts for those listeners, whether they're technologists or whether they're treasury professionals? What any takeaways?
As I look at kind of what's going on in the treasury management space, the customers, the decision makers really need to make sure that they have the flexibility that they need to make their business outcomes a reality. And, you know, let me dive into that one click deeper so that it's not, you know, just a top line sentence. I think right now you're making a choice and you're going through an implementation that is, you know, going to define the kind of the trajectory of of the decisions you make as an organization for, you know, we call it kind of, you know, the next 5+ years. And in doing so, feeling comfortable that you've got kind of the right partnership, the right capability, and the right model behind it is something that, you know, has to be at the foundation of your decision. You know, the buzzwords at the end of the day are going to grow and evolve, you know, as technology is changing faster than it's ever been changing before. It's not about as much, it is about, do you have those capabilities, but it is, do you have also an open enough architecture in what you're bringing to market to consume the next set of capabilities? Because when we get back together and the next time we want to revisit this topic, we'll be talking about a very different list than APIs and RPAs and things like that. It'll be the next set of technical capabilities. If you find that you didn't have an eye towards openness and flexibility when you're making those decisions today, whether it's, you know, in your own internal capabilities or the organizations you're partnering with, that change becomes a very hard prospect for any organization.
Thank you so much, Pete, for your time, insights, and perspectives. Hopefully we can get you on another Treasury Update podcast. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Treasury Update podcast. Be sure to follow Strategic Treasurer on LinkedIn. Just search for Strategic Treasurer. This podcast is provided for informational purposes only, and statements made by Strategic Treasurer LLC on this podcast are not intended as legal, business, consulting, or tax advice. For more information, visit and bookmark strategictreasurer.com.